Hey, everybody, welcome back to On Stage, Off Stage. I'm your host, George Sapio, and this is episode number 177, May of 2024. Our guest this month is Lily Janik. Lily is a theater critic for the San Francisco Chronicle, and I came across an article she wrote way back in October of 2023 entitled, What Responsibility Do Critics Bear When a Theater Company Closes? I was so struck that anyone, let alone a theater critic, would voice that out loud. But it's a legitimate question, especially after COVID-19 has ravaged the theater scene worldwide.
Yeah, I came across your article in the San Francisco Chronicle a while back, and I had to read it three or four times because...
Because you couldn't understand it.
No.
Like my editors.
Let's not get started on editors. That's a whole different thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Believe me. No, it was because you put forth a point of view that you almost felt responsible or questioned your role in... Whether or not a theater company survives. And I had never seen that before come out of anyone who was a critic. The ones that I used to know back when I was living in New York State, dodged the question. Okay, they just waved me off and they went to get another drink and they took a bus and went somewhere.
As far away as they could.
As far away as they could, yes. But what made you write that article? And let's talk about whether or not there is a responsibility for this, because this is touchy subject matter here.
Yeah, I guess whenever I have some uncomfortable feeling about my work, not about a show, but about my role and responsibility or something I've written, I wonder, should I write a column about that? And part of that is just the Nora Ephron, everything is copy instinct in me. Ooh, sounds like something juicy. Let's write about it. That if it's uncomfortable for you, it'll probably be interesting for readers. So that's part of the thought. Another thought, though, is I have this kind of personal mission, or this is one part of my personal mission as a theater critic, and that is to demystify the position, to not make it this scary, on a judge's seat up high somewhere type of thing. That is just not how I see myself. It's not... how I think I move through the world. I think of myself as a pair of bunny slippers, close to the ground and soft and fluffy and the least scary thing ever. But so I don't know. I want to take this position apart and see what is wrapped up in it and maybe what else it can be. So that is the instinct. And I guess I also feel that, you know, if something I love so much in theater artists is when they're vulnerable, actors, playwrights.
About the most vulnerable bunch of people you're ever going to run across.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so I want to be vulnerable myself in return. And it's my way of like participating in the exchange. And so I don't know. I also just really felt bad about all these theater companies closing in the Bay Area this year. And, you know, the Bay Area is what I know, but it is hardly a phenomenon limited to our region.
No, but it's a rather large area with a lot of, I'm using air quotes, big theater companies here.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger metropolitan area.
Exactly. And so it each time it happened, it just hit me a wave of sadness for, oh man, like all this art I was looking forward to seeing. And gosh, all these people I know who are out of jobs now or won't have their shows produced. So there was that level of grief. But then there's also, oh no, what if I not could have single-handedly turned this company's fortunes around, but what if I could have, I don't know, approached my beat differently or completely reimagined my role, and maybe I haven't been doing enough. And pretty much any time I sit down and ask myself, what could I do differently? What could I do more? It's always a healthy conversation to have. And so I want to try to have it and try to be honest, but without being despairing or nihilistic, and also without being Pollyanna-ish. And so that is always the balance I try to strike.
It's a hard balance because your job is to, well, why don't you tell me what your job is? What is a theater critic? Okay. What are you supposed to walk in there and do?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's changing. I can't remember how long ago you wrote me. But I don't know if, Peter Marks had taken a buyout at the Washington Post at that point. I don't think it surprised some people in journalism, but I was surprised that such a major newspaper had accepted a buyout from its one full-time theater critic. And the paper has not announced plans to replace him with another full-timer. So it's just like the market for theater reviews is changing. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when I was a young lass of 30 taking this job, and I was supposed to be the new generation of theater critics with all these digital skills and all this know-how. I'm going to reach the young people somehow, and gosh,
dreams of glory, eyes in the clouds. Yes,
right, exactly.
Yes.
Well, and now I find myself looking at folks in their 20s being like, I hope you're the ones who can save us, because I don't know. It's such a tricky profession. And with that climate of scarcity, this declining arts coverage everywhere, it's kind of hard to just walk into a show and review it with a blank slate in your head. You have this going on in your mental background. How do I make this beat relevant to people who don't think of themselves as theater goers, who might have no reason to click on a link about a theater review. At least they don't think they do. So that's, I am rarely just walking into a show like, I'll see what these artists have to say to me tonight.
Preaching to the non-choir is a very, very tough job. How do you get somebody interested in theater when theater is not a part of their life?
Well, maybe I do once in a while. But every once in a blue moon. But this is something I try to impress upon my sources also, is we have to find a way to invite more people in. We have to find something that someone already knows. I'll give an example. This isn't a theater review, but I just filed a story about, it's a feature about this show that's set in a pho restaurant. And as part of their process, the cast and the director went to a Vietnamese restaurant to learn how to serve and assemble a bowl of pho like a professional would. And what's so great about that story is it and we got photos at the restaurant. We got, you know, the live details of the chef instructing the actors. If you are interested in food, and who is not interested in food, you will have, if you live in that neighborhood, you'll be like, oh, that's my, I pass by that place every day. And so that's a way into theater for people who don't normally think that way, I think.
Theater's for food. That's, I can't argue with that.
Exactly. Yeah. So now everyone's going to be like, oh, Lily, how do I? Lily just wants to report food stories.
Theater critic, food critic. There you go.
It's a good thing that I ate lunch before we recorded this podcast, because otherwise, anyway.
What do I want pho?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and I got to taste some as part of the story. So.
Well, there you go.
But so that was such a long-winded answer. But when I walk into a theater, I do not have a checklist in my head. I am not looking for something. Mm-hmm. My job is to try to, this is going to sound very Northern California and woo-woo of me, but it's actually true. I just try to shed whatever business I have going on in my brain. My cares that day, my worries, my deadlines, mm-hmm. my mother texting me. I try to shake it all off as if I'm going to some religious rite, and I prepare to receive. I open myself, and this is partly why I love getting to the theater early. I'm often one of the first people in the playhouse seated, but I just love that moment of I don't have to be anywhere else. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be. I don't have to do anything. All I have to do is observe.
Yeah.
So I start, you know, paying attention to the pre-show music. I do my very terrible drawings of a set. They're so bad. I can't draw at all. But when I draw, I notice all these things about the set design that I never would have seen otherwise, because I'm forcing myself to be a more careful observer.
Yeah.
And I'm just sinking into my seat and anticipating. And I love that. Oh, gosh. If I weren't a theater person, I might have to be a religious person just to get that feeling again.
We do the same thing, because when I've got a show going up and I'm the playwright or the director or, you know, somebody who's actually not going to be on stage, I'm the audience. I love it. From the moment before the house opens, I just absorb.
Yeah.
I do the same thing you do. I try and go tabula rasa and just let it all wash over me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's the best feeling.
It is.
And so I've got my pen and my notepad there, and I am just trying to, whenever some fleeting scraps of words and phrases float into my brain, I'm trying to harness them before they float away again.
Mm-hmm.
And I often don't even have to refer to the notes later, because the act of writing them down has imprinted them on my memory.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Just every single thing that occurs to me, I'm trying to snatch it before it's gone forever.
Sure. Yeah, prepping for the job, prepping for theater. Even the theater critics prep for what they're going to do. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So when you were a young person, was it always your dream to grow up to be a theater critic?
Ooh.
How did you end up as a theater critic?
How did you become such a mean, nasty person who writes? It's a real question. Like I grew up with a grandmother. She was my primary caretaker most days, who was very, very against saying anything unkind, even about terrible people. Mm-hmm. And so now she has this granddaughter who like writes mean things in print sometimes. And I really struggle to reconcile that. it's, I knew I always wanted to be a theater person. I knew this art form was magic. There's nothing else like it. You can create the most imaginative things with literally a shoestring. No CGI required. You get the audience to buy into, oh, these two people standing next to each other, one of them's dead, one of them's alive. One of them is in the present, one of them lived in a prehistoric time. And the brain just accepts it and rolls with it. You tried to do the same thing in film, it would look so dumb. And I love how theater enlists our imaginations like that. I just love it. So I, you know, tried to do acting. I tried to do playwriting. I tried to do directing. So I am 1,000% the cliche of the critic who's a failed artist. That is me. I own that.
No failed artists. There are just artists who take different routes to get to where what they do rests comfortably upon their shoulders.
Okay. Well, I will accept that, because on my best days, I like to think of theater criticism as my art.
Okay.
Sometimes
there is an art to it, believe me. Yes.
Yeah. Like sometimes when I come up with a really lovely turn of phrase, or I do something I've never done before, I'm like, yeah, you're an artist too, Lily, in your own way.
Shaping words to get ideas across is an art form. We all do it in different ways. Your profession has the onus of, what do I do if this show completely sucks?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And as a theater artist myself, I've been to many, 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 many plays. And I have actually had moments in the theater where I have been in the third row, literally cringing in my seat.
Oh, it's
muttering, muttering out loud.
Oh, you mutter?
Oh, God, make it stop. Make it stop.
You mutter?
This was an exception. This was a play who I cannot name, because it was actually rather popular for a long time.
Okay.
And if the parade is going down Fifth Avenue, I'm walking up six with a cheeseburger. That's the way I, you know. I do not follow crowds. But this was an exceptionally painful piece of text, unfortunately brought to life on a stage. And as I was going home, I was thinking, thank God I'm not reviewing this.
Yeah.
Because I can make up a whole ton of stuff and pretty much make you believe most of it. But I could not possibly make you believe that this was not a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing was, other people walked out of the show going, wasn't it amazing? Didn't you love it?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, A, what's wrong with me? And B, what's wrong with me? But to have something that affect me so much, or, you know, other shows that I, you know, a musical on The Crucible, which I won't go into. Okay. that actually existed. That actually existed.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and it's worse than you could possibly imagine. But to be able to have the responsibility to put your opinion in print about that sort of thing, that's difficult.
Yeah, it's scary.
That's difficult.
You have to have a certain integrity. And this doesn't mean like, oh, I have the best morals ever.
Yeah.
But I don't mean it like that. I mean, you have to have this urge to just ruthlessly comb yourself and figure out why it is you responded so strongly to something.
Yeah.
And find a, marshal the power of your vocabulary to make readers feel vicariously the same.
Okay.
It's a strange urge. I got to talk about this with Alexis Solosky recently. She now writes about an array of subjects for the New York Times, but she, for a long, long time, she was a theater critic for the paper. And she talked about this thing that George Bernard Shaw had called the critical instinct. And I forgot about this, but Shaw defined it as if your parents were putting on a play and their financial success or failure rested on it, and you were reviewing it and it was terrible, and you still had to say that it was terrible, then you have the critical instinct. And when Alexis reminded me of that, I was like, yep, I got that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of makes you like not the best person. It kind of makes you, maybe you're not going to have a million friends, especially in the theater world. And I am okay with that. Or most of the time, I've tried to come to my peace with that. I don't know. I get sometimes we're all human and we all want to be liked, but it is true that I do not have this need to have every single person in the theater world be my best friend. It really helps to be an introvert, really helps to like books and blankets instead of the company of humans. But I guess, I guess when I've walked out of a show and I haven't wrestled with really what it was that made me think that thing about it, I feel like unsettled and incomplete. Like I need to do that, or I'm just going to be walking around like a ball of energy that's going to, I don't know, catapult into something.
Sure.
So I have to work it out.
It's a process, especially when something affects you that way, and you have
to
figure out why and what. Yeah. How badly did COVID knock out the San Francisco Bay Area Theater?
Well, I mean, we started this conversation talking about all the closures.
Yeah.
And that's been what, a half dozen now? And institutions that were beloved and I thought had a ton of support. I'm especially thinking of Bay Area Children's Theater. That was just such a shock. Thinking also of institutions like Theater Works, which is the third largest nonprofit theater in the Bay Area, had an emergency fundraising campaign. And they succeeded, but they can't do that again next year. You can't have an emergency fundraising campaign every year. I'm thinking of California Shakespeare Theater, which this past summer, also one of the larger nonprofits in the Bay. Last summer, they didn't produce any of their own shows. They kind of changed into more of a rental house. And this summer, they're producing one instead of their traditional four. So we have not bounced back.
Right.
I think maybe one theater that I've talked to is close to pre-pandemic audience numbers. And we're still figuring out what that means, what that looks like, how we program and how we budget going forward. And if anyone has the answers, let's talk.
You know, because San Francisco is not unique. It's happened everywhere. Big theaters, small theaters. You know, the ones that closed, and the ones that are still hanging on, going to their backers on hands and knees, begging, you know, because that's what really theater is all about. That's what artistic directors do. They run around begging for money. It's not all.
Yeah,
glamorous.
It's not all glamorous.
No, it's not. And I've always wondered what theater was going to evolve into, or whether the houses were too big to begin with. I mean, there are L.A. theaters out there. It's three theaters. It's $70 million budget for a year just, you know, to put on theater. And, God, I'd love to have that kind of budget. But if something like the pandemic can knock out all the stilts.
Yeah.
And it did. And San Francisco being an example, This is just an idle question. How will theater reform to compensate for something like that? It's a question I think a lot of people are thinking about. And when it comes down to people like yourself who have to tell the truth about what they've seen.
Right.
Is it, are you kicking somebody when they're down? Because that's
how I feel that way.
I know you do.
I feel that way sometimes.
What we're talking here, I mean, it's coming through so clearly.
Oh, man. I love my little, I love my Bay Area theater artists so much, even when I have to, be honest and try to articulate when and how a show doesn't live up to.
Yeah.
The goals it sets out. I mean,
A lot of them don't, even in the good times.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there is a playwright here, Lauren Gunderson, who at one point in the pandemic asked, what if we took a pause on, I can't remember if it was all theater reviews or just like some. But I don't think that conversation wound up going anywhere. But I really empathize with the impulse behind it.
Sure.
It's exactly that kicking someone when they're down thing. I suppose on my better days, I think that taking an artist and an art form seriously enough that you can critique it honestly is a way of strengthening it and showing the world that it matters. On my better days, I can believe that. But
as a playwright who's had his work reviewed, I love the good reviews. All right.
Yeah.
I just want to buy the reviewer a new car and a hot dog. But the ones that pan the plays that I've written, I have found in nearly all cases, they've put their points across eloquently, clearly, and succinctly. And I have been able to learn things about how they saw what I put on stage. And I've been able to come back and say, now I understand what they're talking about. From their point of view, it makes sense. All right. I've done some rewrites. I've done some restructuring. I've tweaked a few things. I'm not saying I've rewritten completely to please them. That would be ridiculous.
Right.
But when a reviewer comes across and says, okay, George Sapio's play is, it's not entirely crap, but here's what I did like. And I'm going to look at that stuff. And most times I actually get something out of it. So it's a benefit. And that just means they wrote something honestly and they wrote something intelligently and they wrote it with respectability. Even when you're writing something that is not, completely laudatory, it has a function and it serves a purpose. And even though we don't want to see the bad reviews, we keep those away from everybody else. But
can I share something that
my
peer, Joshua Cosman, our classical music critic at the Chronicle, told me once? I was really down and out about a bunch of negative reader emails and artist feedback. So this would be the theater critic's version of bad reviews. And I just felt like I wanted to wipe myself off the face of the earth.
No.
Why do I even have a byline? Why do I continue to do this? And Joshua's advice to me, which I will probably remember forever, is that when people like that write you something, it means something. It might not mean what they think it means or what they want it to mean, but it means something.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to decide what it means and how to use it. And to me, that was the most liberating and generous piece of advice. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice.
I hope it works for artists and theater reviews.
I don't think we could survive without reviews, honestly. I think it's an absolute necessary part. the truth has to come across somewhere, and the truth is not always pretty, but it's always beneficial, I think, in, well, not always, but mostly in most cases, yes. Let's switch over to something else, because I was reading some more of your articles, and I read a whole bunch of these things.
You're a reader. Oh my gosh, I love readers.
I can read, yes. But you pulled an experiment, which I found a little bit crazy, but absolutely fascinating. ChatGPI.
Or ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, yes. I misprinted. I typed it wrong, and I read my type wrong. Human Lily versus Robot Lily experiment. Yeah. Oh, come on. Let's talk about that, because that's amazing.
Oh, yeah, that was one of my favorite pieces to write in the past year. I think I really hit that story idea at the right time, just as ChatGPT was debuting. And
let me preface this by saying that ChatGPT scares the hell out of me.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Right, I think it's like Skynet coming down.
I totally hear you. And so this was one of those things again where, I'm feeling some discomfort about my job. Maybe I should write a column about this.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know, all of us writers are worried that robots are going to make us irrelevant. So I decided that I would give ChatGPT a chance to review plays with me, and we'll see who did a better job. And I fed it the exact amount of material my editors would get. So, hey, editors, here's this show I'd like to review. Here's its one sentence synopsis. And I found that ChatGPT added a lot of random names that had nothing to do with the shows in question. I think it just knew that I liked to write about the sound designer Matt Steins, who was not involved with any of the productions the article was about, but ChatGPT threw him in. And then, though, it did this thing where it almost had an insight. I think I called it in the story a faux insight or a pseudo insight. It was something like, this play is about how something about celebrities and guises and appearances and how we perceive our world today through all the images we're bombarded with on social media. And that almost sounded like a thing a critic could come up with for a theater review, but it's like a B- college undergraduate theater view. It's like, okay, and say more. How did you get to that insight? What detail from the show made you think that thing? And of course, the robot couldn't get there.
Yeah.
But the fact that it even got that far, of course, was alarming. And that showed just how much scarier this technology is than previous generations were. And so I guess I just wanted to take the whole experience as a spur to myself to lean into what makes me human as a theater critic, what makes me fallible, what makes me, I don't know, irrational or animalistic, things that I don't think machines are very good at doing.
They're not good at being human.
Yeah, they're not good at really knowing what something feels like. They can pull the data on what other people have said similar things have felt like. But this specific brew of feeling that we're having in the theater seats right here, right now, it's not going to be able to feel that with you.
Yeah.
And so I, as a critic, have to find new ways to express that if I'm going to compete with robots and hopefully win.
I don't think the robots are going to ever come close to what we can do, at least intellectually and emotionally. And I think that's really what counts, because if you start producing art without heart, you got nothing.
Yeah.
So I just want to say thanks for being here today. This has been a really good conversation. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you.
My pleasure.
And I want to close off with two things that you wrote, because they struck me so much that I had to write them down. One is, if an art form can't openly reckon with its weaknesses, it can't evolve. Mm. And that's true. And
I'm like, wow, who wrote that? That's good.
I do that my work all the time. And the other one is a little bit longer, but I think it's amazing. Every obstacle or travail is an occasion to redouble our efforts. We must renew our search for the more truthful, more piquant turn of phrase. We must banish crutches and shortcuts. We must seek the forms of theater that don't even call themselves theater. We must devise forms of criticism that equal our subject's ingenuity. We must write as if our art form, our region, depends on us, because they do. And underneath that, I wrote in a crayon, because that was all I had at the moment. You set the bar rather high, haven't you?
Yeah. Now I'm listening to that. I'm like, gosh, I have to do all that?
Yeah.
I don't know if I can, but, you know, not every review is going to meet that bar. But one of the beautiful things about my job is that if today's review doesn't, I'll get the chance to try again tomorrow.
Yeah. Because there's always going to be theater. People have been talking, oh, theater's on its way out. It's not going to be here. Nobody's going. That's nonsense. You've been saying that since Aeschylus's time.
Yep.
And it hasn't gone away yet. The pandemic hasn't killed it. Community Shakespeare hasn't killed it. Oh, God, I'm going to catch one for that, aren't I? Thank you for what you do. This has been fun.
My pleasure.
Hey, kids, thanks for listening to Onstage Offstage. Onstage Offstage is produced monthly, and all of our shows can be found at onstageoffstage.org and also on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, and Google Podcasts. If you enjoy what we do, please recommend us to your friends. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at OnOffstage. And if you are a theater artist with an upcoming project or interest, or know of someone in the theater world who'd make good chat, by all means, send us a note at onstageoffstagepodcast@gmail.com. Our theme music is Don't Worry, Be Frappy by the composer Max Dickinson. You can find a lot more of Max's magnificent music on SoundCloud. I'm George Sapio. Thanks once again for listening, and please be kind to those with whom we share this rock. And as always, happy theatering to all of you.